Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary Show. Inspiring stories that change lives. Where ordinary heroes tell their extraordinary stories of how they have triumphed over unexpected challenges. This is where we say what can't be said and use the AAA formula for freedom. Awareness, acceptance, and action. Now, here's your host, Hillary Burns.
Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary Show. And today, I want to introduce again our new sponsor, Kikori App. Kikori makes corporate team building and school social emotional learning fun. Help your teams or students create community and connection with SEL, which is social emotional learning. And it's not just one more thing on your plate, but it's fun for you and your students and corporate teams. Visit KikoriApp.com for more information. Thank you, Kikori App. All right. Today, I am very excited to introduce Lanier Bassett King. She has three sons, a daughter-in-law, and a granddaughter. And what she's been doing is really exciting. And I'm going to save it till the second half of the show to let you know. It's something I think that we've all wanted to do, but not probably had the courage to do. So we're going to save that as a little teaser for the second half. I was introduced to Lanier Bassett King. One of our friends said, I should definitely interview her. And it turns out I already knew her. So it's very exciting to have her on the show. Welcome, Lanier.
Thank you so much, Hillary. It's a pleasure to be here and a pleasure to inspire someone else along the way. That is a life well lived. So thank you for that.
Yes, thank you. So I know you said, we were talking about where you might have had some challenges along the way growing up. I like people, who may feel stuck themselves to be inspired by, however you got through those challenges. So do you have anything that came to mind first?
Oh, gosh. When you mentioned that and you think about being accepted, I grew up in Washington, D.C., and a child of middle-class parents who worked really hard to get their kids educated. And I went to private school, and who would have thought that kids would get bullied in private school too? And my brother had some challenges at one school, so we switched schools. And
I switched private schools.
Between second and third grade, I switched schools, and I had no idea how mean kids could be. Until I showed up as a third grade outsider at a new school, petrified, and I was super shy and quiet. And I actually ended up getting threatened and bullied. And, one of the things that I learned is you just can't be quiet about it. And one day my grandmother, she used to drop us off at school, and she said, Lanier, why are you running to the car every day? I said, because I don't want to get beat up. She's like, what do you mean beat up? And so I told her the whole story, but I said, you can't tell anybody. And she says, I'm going to show up on the playground and I'm going to take care of this. I don't know what she did, but the little girl who once threatened me suddenly was like, well, you didn't have to tell anybody. And I was like, but my grandma asked and I was not going to lie to her. And, I look back on that. That was my very first real challenge of needing to be accepted in a new environment, a new place, where I was bringing forth, all that I knew how to be at 8 or 9 years old, and then showing up in a new place. And I just thought everybody was going to wrap their arms around me, and it wasn't so. So that was the very first thing that taught me how to be in communication with people about what's happening.
Now, why, I don't know if you know the answer, but why do you think she was picking on you? Did she do that to everyone? Was it because you were new?
I think it was because I was new and I was an outsider. Now, years later, We ran into each other in the work world, in the cafeteria. And she came over, she gave me the biggest hug. And I was like, oh my God, no one would believe this is my first experience of being unaccepted in life. And I said something to her. I was like, do you ever remember? She's like, I don't remember that. But, really? You know, she said she had a really rough childhood herself.
Mm.
And so I think that part of that was wanting to be accepted maybe by the popular kids in school. Who knows? But it certainly taught me that you don't have to be alone in life.
Mm.
And who I became.
Yeah. Why do you think we have to be quiet about that stuff?
You know, I've often wondered, I don't think I wanted to get her in trouble. I certainly, didn't want any drama. I didn't want to be the center of attention.
Mm.
So I think all of the pieces of the puzzle were ripe for that. Like, how could this be happening to me? What did I do? I just mm-hmm. showed up. And because I wasn't expecting it, I had nothing to understand how to deal with it or any right. of that. And out of the experience, you know, I've realized, I have three sons, as you mentioned, I've realized that they're in their late 20s. Except my oldest, who just turned 30, even though I don't look like I'm old enough to have a 30-year-old. But I've realized watching my children that a lot of times as parents, we don't know to tell our kids, hey, if another kid is picking on you. And so we see this in the mainstream media that a lot of kids, you don't know that they were being bullied, you know. And so I have one of my kids was bullied. Maybe I'll get to that story in a little bit. But
no, tell it now. Now I want to know.
Okay. So,
because I'm just I'm like thinking about bullying. Like, what is the point? Like, why do they do it? You know, I know some kids kill themselves and all this stuff. I mean, it's serious. It's not just a little
serious.
Thing. Yeah. So tell us about your son.
I think it has a lot to do with people wanting to be accepted. So my middle son is an albino child. This is one of my challenges, right, that I overcame. He was, I didn't know anything about albinism. And it's that you have no pigment over your retina and you have a lack of pigment in your skin. And because he had no pigment over his retina, he can't, you know how we see, like we can fixate on a point, like my mm-hmm. finger point. He can't. He sees peripherally. So at 3 months old, you know, they're like, I couldn't figure out why my baby couldn't see me, you know. And so we went to the doctor and the doctor said he's albino. I'm like, well, what is that? So then, of course, I had to do some research to find out what was going on. And they said it's a possibility of 1 in 4 kids could be albino. It's not hereditary.
1 in 4?
It's like a genetic thing. Yeah.
Now, I have to, can I just interrupt? I knew a guy who was albino and he was very, 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 very white. And his hair was white. Everything was white. Was your son white?
He was born with red hair.
Now, what was the father?
My husband is African-American, or my ex-husband is African-American. Okay. But here I had this really pale baby.
With red hair.
With red hair. So, and if I hadn't white. Been in he's labor and delivery.
Not, he's not dark skinned.
No, there's no pigment in his skin. So you have to protect them from the sun. He'll burn.
He think you were having an affair or something to have a white child?
Yeah, that was an interesting little story. And if he hadn't been in there when this little baby popped out, he would have thought, this is not my kid. I was like, that's not cute though. So it's just
wow.
Funny.
That's interesting. 1 out of 4. I didn't, that's high. 1 out of 4. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay, and so go ahead. It's not 1 in 4 will be, but you have a 1 in 4 chance.
Oh.
It's like shooting dice or whatever. Anyway. Okay. So we knew that growing up in Washington, D.C., that my kids were in a predominantly Black African American schools, neighborhoods, and the like. So from a young age, you know, people would make comments about, well, he's different, you know, and exotic and things like that. So they were in private school anyway. But he got to high school. He was getting picked on by the kids. And I'm like, but I'm paying money for you to go to high school. And so he came home one day and he said, yeah, the kids, like, I went to the bathroom and the kids followed me in the bathroom and they were picking on me. And I said, well, what happened? He said, I don't want to talk about it. And I was like, no, what happened? He's like, well, one of the administrators came in and the kids left. He said, but this isn't the first time, right? So I had no idea. But it was a snowstorm starting. So I was outraged. So I called the school and I was like, look, I am paying money for you all so that this doesn't happen. We're not in a public school system where he's matriculating with thousands of kids, you know. And I, it was like the courage to speak up and say, no kidding, not on my watch. And so the assistant principal called me back. He's like, you know, I had heard rumblings of something. And I was like, you heard rumblings? And you hadn't done anything? He was like, well, you know, a lot of times boys will be boys. I'll be damned. Not going to be no boys be boys. What you going to do? He's like, I'll take care of it. I said, okay, because I'm coming. Because that's my child and I'm paying too much money for this. So anyway, whatever he did, it got squashed, never came up again. So I was so thankful. But then, of course, you have to deal with, you know, what remnants of that are left. And like my son says to me, he doesn't want to have kids because he doesn't want to take the chance that he could have a child who may be bullied. You know, and so for me as a mom who wants to be, you know, a grandma 1,000 times, that's just really something that breaks my heart, you know. So, but we moved through that. He's 28 now. He has a real great sense of himself and, you know, pride in himself and, all of my kids are very much loved. We had a real big family insulated around them, which is probably part of my success and inspiration. You know, it's like my family reminded me that each generation is supposed to do better than the last one.
All right. So let's go back to you. So you had the little bullying thing, and then what did you end up doing? Like you were in private school and then you went to college?
I did. So I was a first generation college graduate in my family. So super exciting. And it's funny because we were never given a choice. We were going to college. Like my parents invested us. So we were going to college to make life better for, you know, our family. And so, yeah, I my first challenge freshman year college, I was an honor student. I went to Rutgers.
Oh, okay. Cool.
In New Jersey, not too far away from home.
No. And what were you studying?
Oh, so I went with the plan so that I could study business so I can own my own multinational corporation.
Nice.
But I did not like economics and accounting. So it was like, I cannot do this all day long. So I had always had a passion for political science. So all of my elective courses were political science. So it's like, I'm going to be a political science major. So my parents were like, well, baby, what are you going to do with that? So I was like, I don't know, get a job. So I was very fortunate because I grew up in Washington, D.C. My guidance counselor got me an interview at a government agency. And so throughout college, I worked on breaks and holidays at a government agency. So that was...
Can you say which one?
Oh, yeah. So I started out at General Services Administration.
Okay.
And then our agency, oddly enough, was given to Department of Defense. Yes, wow. Oddly enough. But there was one incident in a college that I want to talk about, and then I'll talk about how life worked out on the other side of, you know, again, talking about being in action. So freshman year of college, first semester freshman year, I was an honor student in high school. So I took placement test, and I had math. I placed into calculus, didn't know that you didn't have to take calculus, placed into calculus, had French, an English course, and a political science elective course first semester. Failed calculus. Devastated. Mm. I was like, failure. Mm. I was like, wait, what, you know, how do I live with, I failed. And then now my GPA has like, tanked because of the F on your GPA. And so I started to question, how could the honor students in college, I wasn't an honor student, how come they got A's in calculus, but I got an F, right? And different, understanding different teachers, different teaching assistants. And I read an article that said Rutgers was famous for failing kids in calculus as freshmen. And I was like, wait, I was an inner city kid going to college, and there was no one looking out for me. Mm. You know, no one telling me I didn't have to take this class. They were like, no, you take all the classes you place into, it'll be fine. It'll be great. I was an out of state student at a state institution. Anyway, but out of it, you know, my grandma always used to say, not only am I going to turn lemons into lemonade, but I'm going to open a lemonade stand. So she was like, okay, baby, you got the F. Now what you going to do with it? You can't wrap your life around that F. So I went to the dean's office and I said, so how are we going to make a difference for people like me, students like me? They're like, Lanier, we're going to take you under our wing. And I became an orientation leader for the school. And I saw we do tours for the school. Mm-hmm. And the deans loved me, and they did look out for me. And then they were like, Lanier, this is not the first time we've heard this story. So we're going to create something called the Minority Mentor Program. And we're going to pair upper class kids with freshmen to keep them from experiencing exactly what you did. Like, you need a network, you know, kind of like the sororities and fraternities have a network. Mm-hmm. We're going to create that for kids who are coming in, who don't have a structure, like out of state, inner city, no parents, first generation parents, you know, sending their first generation to college, right? So it was like, okay, great. I love that you created that. They're like, and we want you to be a mentor. Me? But I feel calculus. And they were like, so what? So I said, okay. So sophomore year, that's I became a minority mentor, did it 3 years, and they would pair men and women, like male and female together, like, and there were usually three. And you'd get a set of students and you'd follow them their whole year. And it was the best experience. You know, and it also taught me that everybody didn't have the same goals that I had. I had a beautiful, brilliant young woman. And she was like, Lanier, I don't want to stay in college. I was like, well, what do you want to do with your life? She was like, I want to have a baby and I want to be a housewife. And I was like, wow, that's not quite how I was raised, you know. But so I learned how to accept that everybody doesn't have the same dreams to get a college education that I do, even though they may be in college. So I learned how to be around different people from all different cultures, races, and all like that in college. And when I graduated 4 years later, I was trying to be a five-year student, and my mom was like, no, you're going to graduate. So when I graduated, the spring break before graduation, I had been working at Department of Defense, and my boss, Mr. Davis, he said, Lanier, can you come in here? And I was like, uh-oh, am I in trouble? He never asked me anything. He's like, Lanier, you've been here. And we really, really appreciate that you've spent these 4 years here with us in our agency. You've made a real difference. And I was like, oh, thanks. He was like, we think we would like to hire you. I'm like, well, what do you mean? He's like, you know, after graduation. I said, like, you were just going to give me a job? He's like, yes, that's what we're going to do. And I said, I don't have to look for a job. Like, all my friends were panicking over looking for jobs. I was like, I don't have to look for a job. He's like, no. And so he said, what day you graduate? I think I graduated on May 30th. He's like, great. You graduate on May 30th. That's a Saturday. And then on Monday, you just come back to work. Like, yes. He was like, you know, we're willing to give up. The government has this, for every, when there's a freeze or hiring freeze, for every two people that retire, you can hire one person. So they, he said to me, we're in a freeze, but we're going to take our precious spot and hire you. And I was like, wow, thanks. So I was, have forever been indebted to that organization and the people there. And, you know, just they kept the ground beneath my feet. And I had so many great life lessons in that. There was a woman, I used to try and get all my work done. I was super appreciative. I was hardworking, try and get all my work done. And this woman said to me, now, Lanier, if you kill yourself getting all your work done today, why do you think we want you to come back tomorrow? What are you going to do tomorrow? So she's like, you're going to have to learn how to prioritize what needs to get done first. And then the things that we want you to think about and actually put longer term effort in, we don't want you to rush through them in 24 hours. So it's like, oh. So I learned a lot from that first job. And, you know, it's like home for me.
And how long did you stay there?
Yeah. I was... Seven and a half years.
Wow. And what? Was it a specific agency? Because I used to work for I was a consultant. I worked for the Defense Nuclear Agency, which was part of it.
I worked at Defense Logistics Agency.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So we were a sub-agency called Defense National Stockpile Center under there. But, I'll never forget Giles LePage. When I graduated, we were summer hires. So you talk about adversity. Every time I would leave, they would terminate me and then they would rehire me. 26 times I was terminated and rehired. That was just the nature of the process and back in the day. And in the summer, they hired me back. As they promised, but they were still trying to get my paperwork done. So I love shopping. So I'll tell you, my career is government contracts. So I ended up in business after all, but in the government. So how did I end up? No one grows up and wishes to be a government contract, someone who buys and spends your tax dollars buying. No one does that. So I love shopping. That's on my lunch hours.
Wait, was this after that 7.5 years or is that part of it?
No, this is right after graduation.
Okay. Okay.
So I'm still there.
Okay.
Right after they had said we're hiring. So I was on my way to go shopping at lunchtime and the deputy administrator, Giles, catches me in the hallway. He's like, Lanier, you got a minute. You know, he was like my boss's boss's boss. So, of course, I have a minute, right? Mm-hmm. Second in command. Of course, I have a minute. So he was like, Lanier, I've been thinking that, you know, you should have a career. I'm like, what are you talking about? I do have a career. I work here. He's like, no, in a specialty field. And I was like, He's like, what part of our organization? They had like six parts of the organization. What part of the organization do you want to work for? And I had worked, bless you. I had worked for all but two of them. And one I didn't particularly like the leader of. So it's like, I'm not going to work there. Guess what? Giles was like, Lanier, I think you should go to contracts. And I was like, I don't think so. What would I do all day? Like, you spend somebody else's money. I was like, that doesn't sound good to me. So I said, say more. He's like, it's like you'll be a professional shopper with someone else's money. Now, when he said professional shopper, I was like, I could shop all day long? Okay. So that's how I ended up in that field. And I said to him, well, why do you want me to do it? And he said, you are very smart. And they're professionalizing the series. And you're also very committed to our mission. So I know we can trust you with the taxpayers' money to fulfill on our agency mission. I was like, okay. Yeah. By the way, I went off to lunch, went shopping, right? And 2 weeks later, I had moved into this position. And that's how I got my field in contracts. And I've been doing that now for 31 years.
Whoa.
So I stayed there for 7. But one thing Giles had said to me, he says, Lanier, if you learn how to buy, everybody must buy. You could go anywhere. You will run out of places to work 1,000 years after you die. So it was like, oh, this could be quite a long adventure. So,
where else did you do that?
So I stayed at Defense National Stockpile for the 7.5 years through the birth of my first kid. And then I moved over to another sub-agency called Defense Fuel Supply Center. And I bought airplane fuel for the U.S. military all around the world.
Wow.
It was super exciting, even though back then they didn't let you travel all around the world. So now there's more travel to go to places, you know. I would be negotiating with, CEOs of oil companies and stuff like that. It was super cool. Little me. And I stayed there for another 3 years. And then I was like, okay, I did the Department of Defense thing. So now I'm doing a 4-hour-a-day commute. That was another challenge. Yes. And I had 3 kids, all under the age of 5. So what did my day look like? I would get up at 4:30 in the morning. I would go and get on the bus, catch the bus to the subway station, catch the subway for an hour, then get a ride from, the head of our organization would pick me up and take me another 15 minutes down the road. I sit down, I work for 8 hours, and then I do it all over. And then as soon as I walk in the door, no kidding, my kids were like, and I was like, oh, look, real work is beginning. So they had moved to Fort Belvoir, Virginia, the base realignment and closures. So, that wasn't where I started out. Mm-hmm. I started out in Crystal City, but they kept moving us further and further down. So I lived in Maryland. It was just too far at that point. So that's why I found another job. Now, the head of our organization, he's like, Lanier, I hate to lose you, but that commute that you're doing, if you didn't get another job, I was going to fire you so you could find another job, because it was just too much. So I'm super grateful. And then my commute was 7 minutes from my house.
Wow. Wow.
I went to work at Department of Agriculture.
Cool.
Where, I thought life was going to be great. And it didn't quite turn out to start out great. I was in a very dysfunctional office. And I can smile now because the women that I worked with are my friends now. But at some point I was like, oh, they are my enemies and they're out to get me. And I got carpal tunnel syndrome there.
Mm.
I had to come home on workers' comp. And I was 27 years old. And the doctors aren't sure whether I'm ever going to be able to hold a pen again. And they were like, if you keep going this way, you're not going to be able to brush your hair or brush your teeth. And I'm like, well, who's going to take care of me? I got these kids, And my neurologist, he was like, Lanier, I want you to understand they're not paying for you to do manual labor. They're paying for your brain. That was the best advice.
What were you doing that was manual labor?
Typing, you know, and writing. Those were functions, you know, that we manually do. Oh, when you have carpal tunnel, you know, the push through that, the damage that it does to your carpal tunnel nerve can cause you, render you to not be able to hold anything.
Wow.
If left unchecked. Wow.
So obviously, so let's come back to this. We're going to go to a quick break.
Okay,
and then
cool.
You can just finish this story, and then we're going to talk about what you've been doing.
That sounds good.
And okay, so I'll save the questions for later. But all right, good. We'll go to the commercial break.
Are you inspired? Are you living a life story you are proud to tell? Are you actively pursuing and creating the life of your dreams? If not, you really need Hillary's AAA program for freedom. Just visit gettingrealwithhillary.com and schedule time with Hillary today.
All right, we are back with Lanier Bassett King, and just a quick another note about our sponsor, Kikori. Kikori, if you introduce Kikori into your corporate team building or school social emotional learning, especially for our kids, Kikori can reverse the effects of COVID on our children's socialization. So go to kikoriapp.com for more information. You won't be sorry, because it's amazing. They have amazing activities that can really impact your teams and your kids. So we're back with Lanier Bassett King. You were talking about your carpal tunnel. I just want to make sure that they fix that. And then how did you get into your next, I don't know if it's a second career or a sideline, but go ahead. So wrap that up and then we'll go into your next thing.
Thank you. So it didn't get fixed, but the doctor was like, don't give up on your career. And remember, use your brain. And so through physical therapy and also voice activated software, I was able to go back to work and pick up my career where I left off and continue to excel forward. And it's been magical. I stayed at Department of Agriculture for 7 years. And then went to private industry for 3 years, and then missed the governments, came back and worked at a couple agencies. So I've stayed in and around government, just really passionate about the missions of helping the taxpayers in so many different ways. So super exciting. And then, of course, I created some side hustles. but, you know, when you asked me the question earlier, it's like, I was raised very practically. You know, we don't have a silver spoon in our mouth. You grow up, you work hard. And I was always wanting to be creative. And I remember as a child, I wanted to be a artist and paint and draw. I like that. My parents were like, no, you're going to have to be a little more practical. You know, I guess starving artist wasn't the thing for my family.
Oh, so. Can I just ask you, because it's stuck in my brain, if you guys did not have a silver spoon, how did you go to private school?
My parents worked.
Okay, so that's what they did with their money.
That's like what they did with their money.
Thing. Okay, yeah. All right, got that.
Yeah,
okay.
There were very few vacations, and they invested in us, and that was priority number one for them, a good education. So because I had to go to college. So
great. All right. So your side hustle, back to your side hustle.
Yeah. So anyway, so one of my side hustles, I started working at sporting events. So I am an usher at sporting events, and I worked football, baseball, basketball, all different items.
Was this, which stadium? Was it at a big stadium?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I worked at
like the Redskins?
The Redskins for a little while. I don't like that too much. Too cold. Oh. I did soccer at RFK Stadium in D.C. And then baseball came back to D.C. So then I did the Washington Nationals for 12 seasons. And I live really close to the University of Maryland. So I do their basketball and football games. So it's you know, when you talked about freedom, oh my gosh, who doesn't love an event, right? So I gave myself permission after I finished my first master's. I gave myself permission to get a job that was fun. Mm. And so I get paid to socialize and watch the events and look out for people. And that's so my goal in life is to meet everybody in the world just once. So if you're going to do that, you got to create these big events. So you got 20,000, 50,000 people. So you got to, in my football section, there's like 2,500 people. And so on any game day, a home game, people come along and I give hugs out in my section because they're my loyal fans.
Are they the same people?
Family. Huh?
Are they the same people each game?
Sometimes. Okay. And sometimes they bring friends and family and then they become part of the circle. So I've been working that same section for 21 years.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I love it. And so that was the first foray into some creative fun. Then I am passionate about education. And I was sitting on the beach one day and I was thinking, if I could do anything, what would I want to do? And I was like, I want to teach. And so one of my deans in my program, he's like, Lanier, don't go and get your PhD until you know whether you like teaching. Because if you don't like teaching and you would have wasted all of this time and money getting a PhD. So I said, that's a good point. So I said, you know, I would start teaching. And so I didn't end up teaching in college. I teach professional for a company. I teach government contracts classes, the glamorous and sexy world of government contracts. And it's great. I take my vacation time from work and then I go teach. It's super cool. And then I go get to hang out and inspire other people. I'm a nerd for like buying. And every time I talk about buying and shopping, you can kind of see the excitement in my face.
Yeah. Now, where did you go teach?
There's a company that I teach for.
Oh, okay.
In out of the Washington metropolitan area. And then they have clients, government and company clients. And they set up the clients and then I show up and teach.
Wow.
So that was super cool. And it had me be able to be with people and connect with people and listen to people and what mattered to them and how could they be more effective at work. Like that, if I can offer you something that saves you, keeps you out of trouble, keeps you excelling, and makes a difference for the American public too, that lights me up. So that was my coworkers always used to make jokes that I was like Jamaican because I had all these jobs. And so they said to me, what are you going to do when you retire? Because that's my dream, is to retire and lounge around on a warm beach somewhere in the world. And I said, you know, I'm going to read romance novels all day long because that is fun. Mindless, easy. Do nothing. And I'm going to chase the sun around the property. And the guys would laugh hysterically and walk away. And so my friend Denise, she would be like, Lanier, don't pay any attention to them. You know how people are. You just show them. You put actions to word and you show them. I said, okay, great. And so one day I said, though, but Denise, what if I'm actually bored? Eating all day. I mean, it's good, but I could get bored. She was like, well, what do you mean? I was like, you know, I've got like four jobs. So she said, well, what do you want to do? I said, well, maybe I'll write a book, a romance novel. And she said, okay. So when the guys would come and say, what are you going to do? I've got a new career. I'm going to sit on the beach and write romance. And so I started to say that. And of course, the guys ran away laughing hysterically again. I truly can count on them to inspire me. So I said to Denise, we would sit right across from each other in cubicles. So I said to Denise, I keep saying I'm going to write a romance novel when I retire. But what if I don't like it? She said, there's only one way to find out, Lanier. And I said, what? She said, write one and let me read it. And I said, okay. So in August of 2008, I started writing my first romance novel to see if I liked it. And so I started, and I, mind you, I still worked on my other jobs, and I would write little notes on napkins and stuff and my jobs so that when I got home or in a couple weeks, I'd finish it and stuff like that. So in about maybe October, when baseball went to the postseason, I was exhausted, so I sat aside finishing the book. And Denise is like, where are my pages? And I was like, oh, right, I'll get to it. So anyway, she was all upset with me because I had stopped writing this book. And so I said, I'm going to restart writing it. And, you know, how do you get inspired, right? So I went and I checked myself into a hotel for a staycation 3 miles from my house. I bought my favorite music, my favorite truffles. I brought my laptop, and I was going to be a lock-in. And I'm going to write this book. And so I was like eating chocolate after chocolate, channels. And I was like, you cannot leave. It was Halloween. So it was like, you cannot leave until you finish. So I started writing again. And I said, I'm not going to tell Denise. And I surprised her in December, first part of December, with the finished book. And I handed it to her. And she was on her way on a vacation. And she says she was reading in the back of the car as her husband was driving with the flashlight. She's reading the book, throwing the papers, because I didn't type it. She's throwing the papers everywhere. So anyway, she's like, oh my God, I love this book. So she said, what do you think? I liked it. I said, great. I put it on a chair in my room, Hillary. And I didn't think any more about it until a number of years later, I was cleaning up and I was like, look, here's that book I wrote. I should probably put it on the shelf. I should probably label it, because if my kids find this book after I've gone, they will think it's junk paper and throw it in the trash. And I was telling a friend that story, and they said, well, why don't you publish it? I said, publish it? They were like, yes, publish it. Didn't you write a book? I was like, yeah, but I didn't write it to publish it. They were like, publish it. And I was like, maybe someday, someday. Anyway, after in 2013, my father died, and he had died unexpectedly of lung cancer, which he had been hiding from us. And so I almost felt like, wow, we're a family that keeps secrets. Like, my kids don't know I wrote a book, you know, all these things. So it was like, it's time to get public about it. So I started writing again. And finally, I published that book in February of 2017.
Now, how'd you do it? Did you just put it on Amazon? Did you like...
So I had got a coach, because there was something about I wouldn't give it to the world. I kept saying, I'm going to publish it, I'm publishing, I'm publishing. I got a coach. And the first thing the coach said was, set the date for when the book will be available to the public. And I said, oh, okay, well, let's do Valentine's Day. So love story. And she said, great, I want you to set up a book launch party. I was like, okay, when is that going to be? Why not Valentine's Day? So she's like, great, now find a place. Great. And after she did, I did all of that. She said, there's no way you're not going to show up with a book to that book launch party. So she recommended that I use Amazon and self-publish it because they're published on demand. You don't have to put up front. Again, this book was never about selling them. Mm-hmm. It was just about proving to myself, having, like you mentioned earlier, having the courage to let it be. Mm-hmm. And so I did. And Amazon, Kindle Direct Publishing, this was 5 years ago. I think they were called CreateSpace. Anyway, they've evolved. Has a wonderful template that walks you through the whole process. Now, if people want help, you can pay a la carte for services from them. But I'm resourceful. So I needed a book cover. Well, I have kids who are artists. So I'm like, hey, mommy needs a book cover. Let me tell you the theme of my book. And so I even have one here. So this is my first book, Falling in Love with Chocolate. So you can see the cover of the book is a woman walking into a chocolate shop. This one takes place mostly in Belgium. Hmm. And so I said to my son, and he created this cover. And I was like, ah. And then, you know, I needed someone to help me edit it. And there's a big difference between the way you read your stuff and the way an editor reads your stuff, you know. And then they were like, you need a picture, like a headshot. So like each step in this process was challenging me to go beyond my little comfortable space, kind of like, you know, what you're offering to folks, right? And getting real and what do you want? And when are you going to take these actions to take it? So that's how book one happened. Now, Hillary, I want to tell you, I wrote the book. Other than Denise, I never thought anybody was going to read it. So at the book launch, people were like, how do we buy these books? So I was like, oh, I brought some on. So then they bought the book. So you have to learn how to set your prices, figure out, you know, how much revenue you want to make. And then people are like, I want you to sign it. I'm like, you want me to sign my name? No, I want you to write me a message. I was like, oh, like a personal message. Okay, great. I was just thinking I was going to socialize through this party. People are like, no, sit down. I was like, okay. And then people will read it. And then they will offer you their opinion. But, you know, I started to think about what in life do people not ever offer you opinions about? So how is your book any different? And so
did they like it?
Some liked it. Some were like, like my sons are like, kind of boring, huh? You know, now that's probably because they only got to page 5. Right.
Right.
But my mother read my book. And when you write a romance novel, you don't really think that your mother is going to be reading the spicy love scenes, right? And then, like, so I would be turning beet red when my mother is like, oh, my God, and on page 104, she's like, oh, this is scandalous. And I was like, oh, my God. So, and the other thing that people want to know the most interesting things. Like, how do you come up with these ideas? And I was like, oh, I made it up. So then people think they know you from your books. And I'm like, okay, if you want that I'm in all these books, I'm having a really great life. So, and one other thing I'm really passionate about is that people are people everywhere. And so as I travel the world, I do a lot of research now for my books that I'm like out to just embrace the cultures. And for people who can't travel, like I've had the blessing to be able to travel, I try to write in those places so they can feel like they're walking those steps through the books themselves. So I can ramble on forever. Let me be quiet for a minute.
No. I love it. So did you stop working? And do you do this full time? Have you sold a lot of books? Like, no?
I have not stopped working. I am closer and closer to retiring. I'm still passionate. And I am down to 3 jobs now instead of, even though I guess counting, I've written 4 books now. I just finished the last one. They're called the Dynasty of Love series, and they're all on Amazon. What I realize is working full time and having 2 other part-time jobs, there's not a lot of time to write. So you have to actually set aside the time. Now, I used to write on my phone. I'd send myself emails on my commute to and from work. So then in the pandemic, we had no commute. I had like a 10-second commute. So my 2 hours of commuting back and forth was my writing time. And so I had to learn how to find time to write. So now I send myself like paragraphs and then they become chapters. So I've sold probably all total of the 4 books. I'm getting ready to launch this 4th one. I probably sold about 900 books, which is pretty good for somebody who never planned to write. But you get fans. That's the other thing I didn't know. Like, people are like, so when's your next book coming out? I'm like, it took me 8 months to write this book. And now they read it in 2 days and they're like, when's the next one?
So how do they find you?
So a lot of times I have a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. So I don't write under Lanier Bassett King. I write under L. Elaine, which is my first initial middle name. So that I don't mix work in my Audrey romance novels. So I have a Facebook page, L. Elaine Romance. Mm. And then my website is under construction for the new book. So when it comes up, it'll be lelaineromance.com. And then on Amazon, you can find me. If you just remember Falling in Love with Chocolate, which is the first one, you'll see. And then even there's a picture of me on the back. So, and then they're all linked. All 4 of them are linked together.
Awesome. That's amazing.
It's been a
super fun. So working 3 jobs, wrote 4 books, 3 kids. Anything else you're hiding from us?
I'm starting to paint and, you know, really discover, it's crazy. Both my parents passed away now. Mm. And so there, you know, I there's no one to remind me to be practical. So now I've been, and I have two of my 3 sons are artists. So, watching them be creative has me be creative, and you know, just what do you want to explore next? And so my next adventure, I want to go paint landscapes in beautiful places in the world, like of a countryside in Tuscany, or like I was in the Maldives a few weeks ago, and I did a painting there in the middle of the Indian Ocean, sitting outside of my cousin watching her sip wine. And so we had a sip and paint on the Indian Ocean. So,
wow, that is so cool. So, wow. You've said a lot. We have just a couple minutes. We have 1 minute left. Okay. Anything in closing before we close out and thank our sponsor again? Anything you want to leave to the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you were spot on when you talk about, really creating what you want to be up to in the perspective of freedom. Like, what could I create? Mm-hmm. Like anything, you know, and what do you want to be up to when your life is over? Like, I leave nothing. The one thing I've learned is life is short. So enjoy the moments, constantly reinvent yourself. Don't be limited by whatever happened before. You have every opportunity to inspire yourself if you can't find anybody in the world to inspire you. So that's just the grit to continue moving forward and going beyond just surviving and loving my life has been such a blessing.
Well, thank you so much for your inspiring story. And I can't wait to get your books and start reading them. I don't know if I have to read them on the beach, but I'll read them anywhere. So
hey, wherever you want.
Yeah. So thank you so much. And just thank you again to our sponsor, Kikori. They're transforming education one activity at a time. To find out more about how to, accelerate your corporate team building and school social emotional learning, go to KikoriApp.com for more information. And just another thank you, Lanier Bassett King, known as on Facebook, L. Elaine Romance. If you want to find out more about her books, or you can go onto Amazon and look under the Dynasty of Love series. So thank you so much. And I think we're over time. Yes.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Real with Hillary show. We hope you are entertained and inspired. Please subscribe to Hillary's newsletter. Go to GettingRealWithHillary.com for more freedom techniques and fantastic stories and links to other great stuff. And don't forget to tune in every week on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio TV. And let's get real. Let's get connected. Let's get inspired and create that life you love.